Welcome to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's going to take the next few minutes to share some great words of hope, insight, humor, and relevance. In today's lost and searching world, that's something everyone desperately needs to hear. Speaking of that, we'd love to keep this conversation going with you anytime through our website, richardellistalks.com. In fact, there's so many ways to connect with us from there that you really need to check it out for yourself, richardellistalks.com. But right now, let's go ahead and get things off and running with today's talk. Here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Maternity Test, and I have a few questions we'll go through. First of all, here's one question. How will I know if my vomiting is morning sickness or the flu? Answer, if it's the flu, you'll get better. What is the most common pregnancy craving? Answer, for men to be the ones who get pregnant. What is the most reliable method to determine a baby's sex? Childbirth. The more pregnant I get, the more often strangers smile at me. Why? Because you're bigger than they are. My wife is 5 months pregnant and so moody that sometimes she's borderline irrational. So what's your question? That was the answer. So what's your question? What's the difference between a 9-month pregnant woman and a model? Nothing if the pregnant woman's husband knows what's good for him. How long is the average woman in labor? Whatever she says divided by 2. My childbirth instructor says it's not pain I'll feel during labor, but pressure. Is she right? Yes, in the same way that a tornado might be called an air current. When is the best time to get an epidural? Right after you find out you're pregnant. Is there any reason I have to be in the delivery room while my wife is in labor? Not unless the word alimony means anything to you. Is there anything I should avoid while recovering from childbirth? Yes, pregnancy. And last one, our baby was born last week. When will my wife begin to feel and act normal again? Answer, when the kids go to college. I found a sign. This was posted, I think, outside of a liquor store. It said, don't forget to buy a bottle for mom for Mother's Day. Remember, you're the reason she drinks. And the last one, little Johnny was playing church with 3 kittens. His mother was happy about the fact that at least Johnny had become religious. He had the kittens sitting in a row and preaching to them. His mother smiled and went about her work. After some time, she heard loud meowing and hissing and ran back to the open ground. She saw Johnny baptizing the kittens in a tub of water. She called out, Johnny, stop that. Those kittens are afraid of water. Johnny looked at her and said, they should have thought about that before they joined my church. So. All right. Go to Genesis chapter 3, verse 16. Says this. To the woman he said. Now this is after everything's created. Man and woman in the garden. They sin. Everything goes haywire. Now they know they're naked, they're ashamed, they're hiding. I mean, it's not good. It's not what was intended and how it started. And the consequences start getting doled out. And here in one verse, look what happens to womankind. To the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband and he shall rule over you. And if you read it in the NIV, another translation, New International Version, it says, to the woman he said, I will greatly increase your pains in childbearing. With pain you will give birth to children, your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. How could any woman who reads the Bible, has ever even heard of the Bible, or finds this verse, possibly be thinking about marriage or having children? I mean, it says it right here. Why would any woman subject herself to those physiological things? And the more pregnant a woman looks, the more as a man, and I'm telling you ladies, from a man's perspective, it does occur to us, how are they going to get that baby out of there, you know? And I think women sit around talking and like, okay, you know, this baby's got to come out of this body and there's like only a couple ways to do it and both of them are pretty painful. Why would anybody go through this? And how would you possibly consider doing it a second time? Right? What were you thinking? Go to John chapter 16. New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. And here's a conversation with Jesus and his disciples. John chapter 16, verse 17 and following. Then some of his disciples said among themselves, this is among themselves, what is this that he says to us, a little while and you will not see me, and again a little while and you will see me, and because I go to the Father. If you go back and read the previous verses, he's telling them all this stuff. They're like, what is he talking about? They said, therefore, what is this that he says? A little while. We do not know what he is saying. Now Jesus knew that they desired to ask him, and he said to them. So he knows they're talking among themselves. And you know what? It's really just like a normal family. You know how little conversations going on between kids? Like, well, what is she thinking? What did Dad mean by that? Like, are we in trouble or not? Or what's going to happen? Could we be killed? You know, like you're all talking, trying to figure out what's really going on. So Jesus knows they're asking questions, and he addresses it. Are you inquiring among yourselves about what I said? A little while, you will not see me, and again, a little while, you will see me. Then he addresses it. Most assuredly, I say to you that you will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. And you will be sorrowful, but your sorrow will be turned into joy. Now, let me tell you something about being a Christian and about the whole Jesus thing. If you don't get that and understand that, then you're going to have a very hard time making it through this life. You have to, at some point, come to grips with the fact that no matter how much sorrow you are experiencing or have experiencing, you're dealing with a God who guarantees, promises, it is a fact that he can turn your sorrow into joy. I did a funeral service for a 17-year-old boy who hung himself. If you backtrack his texting, his conversations, he was in another state. He was with his girlfriend. He had gone out for a walk, had spoken to one of the boys at the funeral, said he had talked to him that day. Everything seemed normal. But as it turns out, I think he told someone that he was about to not be able to stay there anymore, and he couldn't imagine being dependent on his girlfriend and that living situation. So he went out at 1 a.m. for a walk and was going to come back, and he didn't come back. He got somewhere, took his belt off, somehow rigged it where he could hang himself and shut it down because he couldn't take it. The pressure, the sorrow, the pain of whatever he was feeling at 17 was so insurmountable, he checked out. You have to understand, and I said this to that crew, the thief comes to steal, kill, destroy. But I am come that you might have life and have it more abundantly. So you say, well, who is this for? It's for everybody, because all of us get in places and get in moments where we get completely overwhelmed and we say, God, I can't take this anymore. And this sorrow, this pain, this grief, this life is more than this little person can stand. You've got to get me out of here. I've got to get out of here. I've got to medicate. I've got to do something. I'm going to read you a bunch of verses today. You have to understand when Jesus says these things, let's read it again. Verse 20, most assuredly, I say to you, and whenever you read something most assuredly, it means he's positive. Most assuredly, I say to you that you will weep and lament. He's telling them for a fact, this is going to be part of what's coming, but the world will rejoice. You'll be sad. They'll be like, wahoo, we got rid of him. And you will be sorrowful, but your sorrow will be turned into joy. A woman, and look at the example then that he inserts here in verse 21. A woman, when she is in labor, has sorrow because her hour has come. It's game on. Here come the contractions. But as soon as she has given birth to the child, she no longer remembers the anguish for joy that a human being has been born into the world. And somehow God uses the fact that a child has been born to make her brain dead. And every once in a while you hear about a woman who's just had a baby and they're sitting there holding the baby and she starts talking to her husband about having another one. Which is really not hard to talk a man into making another one. It's just having another one he's not all convinced about. So in the midst of the context of Jesus talking about sorrow and grief and what's coming in joy, he inserts a woman having a baby. And that it is very intense. It is very painful. It is completely overwhelming. You know, you're saying words you didn't know you knew. You're swinging at people. You know, you did this to me. You know, all these things that are said. And yet the maternity test kicks in immediately. And you say, well, I can't do this again. And you go, yeah, I can. And if that's what I want. And then your desire is for your husband, just like Genesis says. And sooner or later, you end up back together somehow. Now, see, today we can control all this. Back in the day, you just had babies. And you're drawn to each other, and boom, here's another one, another one, another one. And you say, well, why would I even be with that person? Because you love each other. And God has built into the system, even though there is sin, there is this thing called love, and we are drawn to each other, or there wouldn't be people. I still believe if it were not for love and physical attraction, that men would live on one continent, women would live on another continent, and we'd get news feeds about how things were going, and the world would end, you know, because there wouldn't be any more kids. I'll just leave it at that. Read verse 22 with me. Therefore, you now have sorrow, but I will see you again, and your heart will rejoice, and your joy no one will take from you. Now, let me tell you something about joy. I did not even know what joy was until I was 20-something years old. Not really. I'd get little hits of something, you know, like, whoa, wow, what was that? I kind of felt a warm, fuzzy something. Joy is not about being happy. You can be at your own mother's funeral and have tremendous joy. Amazing joy. You say, well, were you happy at your mother's funeral? It's not about being happy. It's I knew where she was. I knew that in spite of the sorrow, it was joy. It was going to be okay. She was okay. There's just hope that the world grieves without hope, as it says in Thessalonians. It's not bad to grieve. It's just don't be like people who grieve without any hope. You can have joy, sustained, sustainable joy, no matter what happens. And people that don't know Christ or who don't walk with God and don't understand these things, it's just a crazy roller coaster ride. And the lows are unbelievably low. And so the farther down you go, I got to get back up. So you're shooting stuff in your body. You're smoking something. You're doing something. But we got to get high. We got to feel something. We got to get back up where we're on top. But then the way you got up there crashes again. Why don't you find you some way to have some sustained joy? Because I'm telling you, if you're breathing and you breathe much longer, you got trouble coming. You got sorrow coming. There's so many things that can happen. You can physically be sick. You have family members who can physically be sick. You can have kids that are in trouble. You got your kids. You can have parents who are in trouble. Aging, if everybody lives, people get old. Imagine me, I mean, my poor children, me as an old man, I'm trouble healthy. What if I lose my mind even more? You say, well, I want to think about that. You better stop somewhere along the way and think, because you are going to need, with the sorrows of life that come, you're going to have to find someone who can turn all your pile of crap into joy. All right, now go to Psalm 30. And by the way, read your Bible. And this is so no-brainer, stupid stuff. Read your Bible. You say, well, I need help, and I want God to talk to me. You got a whole book. You've got stacks of love letters, information, how to do it, how not to do it, warnings. Read the book. You say, well, it doesn't make sense. I'm going to read this in English really slowly. And when I'm done, you tell me if it didn't make sense. It makes sense. Psalm 30. Let's just start on this one with verse 1. I will extol you, O Lord, for you have lifted me up. You have not let my foes rejoice over me. O Lord, my God, I cried out to you and you healed me. O Lord, you brought my soul up from the grave. You have kept me alive that I should not go down to the pit. Sing praise to the Lord, you saints of his, and give thanks at the remembrance of his holy name. For his anger is but for a moment. His favor is for life. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. You say, well, I don't want any more of these nights. You can't control all that. The reality is the nights are coming. The weeping is real, but you have to wait for the sun to rise before you shut it down yourself and say, I'm out. Keep reading. Now in my prosperity, I said, I shall never be moved. Lord, by your favor, you have made my mountain stand strong. You hid your face and I was troubled. I cried out to you, O Lord, and to the Lord I made supplication. What profit is there in my blood when I go down to the pit? Will the dust praise you? Will it declare your truth? In other words, God, you got to save me. What good will I do you dead? Hear, O Lord, and have mercy on me. Lord, be my helper. You have turned for me my mourning into dancing. How do you go from mourning to dancing? If you're a Baptist, you don't, but it's in the Bible. You've turned for me my mourning into dancing. You have put off my sackcloth and clothed me with gladness. These are extremes. When someone dies and they were in mourning, they'd get sackcloth, get ashes, and throw them on themselves and put sackcloth on and demonstrate their tremendous grief in the mourning process. And yet on the other end, it's not even a garment. He describes a physical garment like sackcloth. It's literally like putting on gladness. where you're dressed in something, you're like, wow, it's going to be okay. It's better than okay. You have turned for me my mourning into dancing. You have put off my sackcloth and clothed me with gladness, to the end that my glory may sing praise to you and not be silent. O Lord, my God, I will give thanks to you forever. You know, it is very interesting to pastor a church and to watch people come or not come to worship. And you say, well, what is that? For the whole package, for the singing. If you could stand somewhere and watch people sing, you find out a lot about people. Because some people, you say, well, but we're, you know, some of us are white and that's how we roll, you know. I've seen some white people under the influence do some crazy worship, earth, wind, and fire. You know, you get the right white person under the right influence and they can go. Hands coming up, whoop, whoop, you know, they're doing it. You say, well, yeah, but I was under the influence. And my question is, why aren't you under the influence here? Under the influence. Now you say, well, now you're judging, you're making fun. No, I'm not. I'm just telling you, it's an interesting thing to observe. Because sooner or later, someone walks in and you look around. Now, there are some crazy people in the world that come in and look around like, everybody see me raise my hand. I praise the Lord. And, you know, they're a little loud and making a scene. You don't have to make a scene. There is something about singing, love songs, and songs you go, you know what, God, I've been trying to tell you, but that song, it's like a card. You get a card and go, I couldn't come up with these words. You know, I'm going to sign that and give that to her. That's what I was thinking right there. You say, well, I didn't think I'd come up with something himself, because not everybody can do that. Thank God there are guys like David. And the Holy Spirit picked these guys and wrote it all down. And I open my Bible and I go, ooh, that's it. That's what I'm thinking. Hey, Lord, hang on a minute. Let me read you this, because this is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm thinking. You got to help me. And thank you for not letting me die when I wanted to die, and that it did turn to joy, and the weeping did go away. And then you say, well, the words are good, but maybe if somebody put that to music, wow, that'd be extraordinary. And then they do. And then you have a way to express it. Now, I don't know what's going on the radio right now, but there are too many Mexican stations. I do my little search button, and there's like a whole section in there. It's like they've taken over. And it's that crazy harmonica thing, and the trumpets, and all that crazy Mexican Tejano music. Now, if I'm eating enchiladas, I can handle it. But just to be bombarded with it on the radio, I'm not interested in that. You know why? I don't like that Mexican music. You know why I don't like that Mexican music? Because I didn't grow up with that Mexican music. You know who likes that Mexican music? Mexicans. You know why they like it? Because it's their music. You know what they think about our music? They're trying to take over the radio so they don't have to push the button and hear our music. Now you say, I don't like that music. It's not my music. What happens to you is you find out at church, I'm really not just white. I'm really not just black. I am not Mexican. I'm not Sri Lankan. Let's get into that sitar music and all that stuff. Anything with sin in it, you shouldn't be listening to. I'm just saying. You know, there's some messed up music on the planet, unless it's not your music. So what you try to do here is say, okay, well, we're all different. So like Christian trumps everything, right? Right. So you say, well, Lord, someone else, when they hear that tune, it stirs them the way that other kind of music stirs me. So I think we're going to be a family. And we're listening to all kind of music and try to worship together. Now, I will encourage you to do this. Somewhere, find you some music and worship. And if you have enough sorrow and enough grief, you will stop medicating it the other ways under the influence of everything else and get under the influence of the Spirit of God and let him turn your sorrow into joy in a sober way. Psalm 40, verse 1. Listen to what he says here. I waited patiently for the Lord. Can you do that? I waited patiently for the Lord. Well, God, I got a problem. You got to fix it. He says, okay, I'm working on it. I don't mean later. I mean now. And if you don't fix it right now, I'm going to go do something stupid. Well, knock yourself out. I'm trying to teach you to wait on me and to trust me at the same time. I waited patiently for the Lord. He inclined to me. He heard my cry. He also brought me up out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock and established my steps. He has put a new song in my mouth, praise to our God. Many will see it and fear and will trust in the Lord. Psalm 126, verse 5. Now, I don't know that I ever got this song, an old song or these verses, till literally this week. I'm old enough that there was an old hymn, bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves. You had to have like a Salvation Army outfit on to sing it, but you know, we will come rejoicing, bringing in. You had somebody banging on a piano and just, you're like, ah, this is worse than Mexican music. You know, it's just, okay, what's, you got to explain this stuff. All I heard was the song, nobody, I didn't get it. Now I get it. Where do you think bringing in the sheaves comes from? Look at these verses. Those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. So sowing and reaping is all of a sudden a part of the picture. He who continually goes forth, what do you mean goes forth? Goes forth weeping, bearing seed for sowing, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. So you go out, you may go out weeping, sowing your seed, brokenhearted. But God says here, when you go out sorrow with tears, weeping, sowing, doing the work of sowing, that you will come back with sheaves. What are sheaves? It's the harvest. Man, I got to go back to this funeral deal the other day. There's one girl who comes to our church who said, there's a woman, she's a friend of mine in business, her son has committed suicide, and they don't have anybody to do the funeral. Would you do it? And Rebecca looks at me and I look at her and, you know, you don't do stuff like this because I don't know the kid. I don't know anybody. I feel this overwhelming responsibility and / opportunity that there's going to be a room full of however many there are of people who might be listening. And so where I knew no one, I go in and end up weeping. Why? And I told him these exact words, and please, you know, just go with it for once. I said, somebody gives a damn about you. And I told him, I said, I don't know anybody in this room, but I came here because there's a chance you won't kill yourself. There's a chance you might hear. There's a chance you'll realize somebody cares enough about you to be here and try to talk plainly to you and help you get a life, an eternal life, a full life. So is it fun to go do those funerals? No. Are there tears involved? Yes. But I'm going to tell you something. There is a harvest. And my plan, and I am working my plan. My plan is to one day get to heaven and meet some of those people, some of those 15, 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old kids who are trying everything in the world to fill the emptiness and make something work. And maybe one of them walks up and says, hey, I was at that funeral and I got it and I didn't kill myself and I actually lived and thank you. You say, yeah, but you're a preacher. You're a preacher. You get a chance to do that. I don't get a chance. Oh, yes, you do. Don't you be copping out on it. Now you got a problem. Yeah, but you get to preach on the radio and you get to, you know, you're good at that. You know what? I am called to do this. You are called to do the same thing everywhere you go. And you'll have to answer for not doing it if you're not doing it. You say, well, my faith is really personal to me. Well, then explain that to all the people who end up in hell because it was so personal to you. Well, I didn't want to offend anyone. Well, you didn't, but I'm sure hell will be very offensive forever and ever and ever.
We'll get back to Richard in a moment to close out today's talk. But first, I want to share something about our program. Our mission is actually very simple, to take the planet. So it's our prayer that these daily talks from Richard aren't something you only hear and enjoy, but that they inspire you to share with others. Together, we can do this. The message of the gospel is something everyone needs to hear, and that's why it's such a priority to us. So join us in this important mission. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD to say you're in. Or you can get on board with us through our website, richardellistalks.com. Well, here's Richard with some closing thoughts for us.
You sow in tears, you reap in joy. Some of you are sowing these tears in a closet someplace over a son, over a daughter, over a mom, over a dad, a brother, a sister, an uncle, an aunt, a grandmother, somebody, a friend, and you sow in tears.
And God says, wait, hang in there, wait. He said, God, but it's been 5 years, it's been 10 years, it's been 30 years. Some of these prayers don't get answered till after you are dead. I could go out this afternoon and sow seed in a field, sow corn in a field, and I could die before midnight, my corn will still grow. You put seed in the ground, the seed grows after you're gone. Put seed in the ground, even if it's with tears.
You've been listening to Richard Ellis Talks. We really appreciate that you've spent this time with us, but we want to keep the conversation going with you. A couple of ways you can connect with us is by giving us a call anytime at 855-6-RICHARD. That's 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is through our website, richardellistalks.com. You can email us, sign up to get the daily talk sent to your phone each day, right on the prayer wall where we can pray for you, or even stay in touch through our Facebook page at Talk with Richard. We love bringing you the program every day, but it means even more to us when you let us know how the program has helped you. So call 855-6-RICHARD or connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. Finally, if you enjoy the program, let us know by your generous support. It would really mean a lot to us. richardellistalks.com. So until next time, have a great day, and thank you for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.